Reduction of the St. Mile Salient. The St. Mile Salient, which had been formed in the fall of 1914, seriously hampered French rail communications between Paris and Lorraine. Pershing's First Army headquarters opened in the St. Mile area on 13 August. The concentration of troops for the operation began at once. Preliminary plans called for a major attack by 14 American and 3 French divisions. Many obstacles were met in setting up this operation, most of them arising from the fact that our forces were unbalanced in favor of infantry. That is, they lacked sufficient artillery, tank, air, and other various units to round out an operative army. As we have seen, this state of affairs was due to the previous demands of the British and French for priority for machine gun and infantry units. Petain now came to our aid by providing over half the artillery needed, about half the airplanes and tanks. Pershing's determination to build up an American force capable of major operations seemed about to bear fruit. Then on 30 August, when the plans and preparations were well underway, the other Allies once more presented a plan for dispersing the American troops among their own forces. This time, Foch came in person to Pershing's headquarters to press his views. Foch was elated by the success of the Anne, Marne, and Amiens operations. He saw that the Allies should immediately exploit the resulting German disorganization, and he had a plan for doing so. This plan involved reducing the size and scope of the St. Mile attack and splitting the American forces into 3 large groups, one on the south face of the St. Mile salient, one under the French army between the Meuse and Argonne Forest, and one west of the forest. Pershing agreed that it was a sound idea to give the enemy no respite, but he could see no valid reason for splitting his forces. This plan seemed to him a step backward from his objective of a unified American force. Foch pointed out that the Americans were not ready to fight independently because of the lack of combat balance already referred to. Pershing replied that this unbalance was the result of Allied requests. He further reminded Foch that the other Allies had promised to lend supporting units when needed and stated that the time had now come for them to fulfill this promise. The discussion became heated. Foch finally said, "I must insist upon the arrangement." Pershing answered, "Marshal Foch, you may insist all you please, but I decline absolutely to agree with your plan. While our army will fight wherever you may decide, it will not fight except as an independent American army." Finally, an agreement was reached. The St. Mile operation would be reduced in scope to an objective 6 to 8 miles short of that originally planned. Pershing would employ the minimum force believed necessary to reach the new objective within 3 or 4 days. He promised that the St. Mile attack would be followed about 2 weeks later by a much greater one extending from the Meuse River to the Argonne Forest. In order for this second attack to be launched on schedule, preparation for it would have to begin at once. The modified plan for the St. Mile battle was rapidly completed. This battle had now become subordinated to the Meuse-Argonne attack, but it was very important because it was the first American operation. The St. Mile salient was of considerable importance to the Germans. Its offensive value was that it impaired the Allied lateral communications, as already noted, and it threatened the rear of the important fortifications of Nancy and Verdun. It was of defensive importance in that it covered Metz and the Briary coal mines. For these reasons, this already naturally strong position had been carefully fortified, particularly with great wire entanglements that were expected to prove serious obstacles. The fierce fighting earlier in the year had made such inroads into German manpower, however, that it was essential for them to economize wherever possible. To further this purpose, the German command had already ordered a step-by-step withdrawal from the salient. Preliminary measures, such as the removal of heavy material and some relatively immobile artillery pieces, actually began on 11 September, the day before the attack. The offensive plan required 2 nearly simultaneous attacks. Major General Cameron's 5th Corps would assault the west face of the salient, while Leggett's 1st Corps and Dickman's 4th Corps were driving against the southeast face. Meanwhile, a French corps was to make a secondary attack against the nose, following up and exploiting the success of the two main attacks. Thanks to the artillery furnished by the French, the First Army had over 3,000 guns to support the attack. French and British reinforcements brought the total number of airplanes up to nearly 1,500, which was the greatest concentration of air power up to that time. Participating were 267 French light tanks, some manned by French crews and some by American. The Air Force was controlled by Colonel William Mitchell. His force comprised American squadrons, a French air divisions, and British, Italian, and Portuguese units. About a third of the aircraft were attached to the ground forces. The remainder, divided into two air brigades, struck alternately at the faces of the salient and at its communications and supply installations in rear. Local air superiority was maintained throughout, and the Air Force made an effective contribution to the victory despite unfavorable weather. The battle opened at 0100 12 September with an intensive artillery preparation. At 0500, the infantry moved forward. By the end of the first day's fighting, most of the American units had reached the objectives set for the second day. Pershing therefore ordered the schedule to be stepped up. On the morning of the 13th, the 1st Division, advancing from the south, joined hands with the 26th, advancing from the west. By the end of the day, all objectives had been taken and the salient had been reduced. A much greater advance could probably have been made, but since we were committed to the Meuse-Argonne offensive, the St. Mile attack had to be stopped. French units began relieving the American division so that the latter could be moved immediately to the Meuse-Argonne area. As a limited offensive, the St. Mile operation was a striking success. We took 15,000 prisoners and 257 guns at a cost of about 7,000 casualties. It was not a hard fight, but it showed the competence of our commanders and their staffs to handle a large operation. The fighting quality of our troops had already been proved in the Anne-Marne offensive. The United States Army had now come of age. Foch hastened to send his congratulations to Pershing. The Meuse-Argonne Offensive. The American First Army's task of preparing for this battle was tremendously complicated by the St. Mile Offensive, which, as we know, was taking place during the preparatory phase of the Meuse-Argonne operation. Because the decision to make the main attack west of the Meuse was reached so late, most of the more experienced units were already involved in the St. Mile operation. Hence, units to lead the Meuse-Argonne attack had to be chosen from among the less experienced divisions. In the short time available, some 220,000 men of the French Second Army had to move out of the region between Verdun and the Argonne force, while 600,000 American troops were moving in. All movements, whether by mortar, rail, or marching, had to be made at night. Many of the American units were engaged at St. Mile when the concentration began. But the move was accomplished smoothly and precisely under the plans that had been worked out by Colonel George C. Marshall, Assistant G3 of the First Army. The remarkable staff work aroused the admiration of the other Allies. The area over which the attack was to be launched is a difficult one. On the east, the heights of the Meuse give good observation over the entire zone. On the west, the rugged and thickly wooded hills of the Argonne Force provide a strong obstacle in themselves and furnish commanding observation over the zone to the east. In the center, a long north-south ridge forms a watershed between the valleys of the Meuse, unfordable, and the Aire, fordable only in a few places. This ridge commands both valleys. The area between the Meuse and the Argonne Force is generally open though dotted with small woods and villages. The entire zone had been carefully fortified in great depth during the 4 years that the Germans had occupied it. Three main lines of defense had been thoroughly organized. A fourth line of great natural strength had been laid out, but had been organized for defense in only a few places. In addition to these principal lines, practically every wood and village between them had been fortified as a strong point. The mission of the First Army, American First Army that is, as stated by Foch, was to drive the enemy back to the Sedan-Meuse line before winter weather made offensive operations too difficult. The French Fourth Army would attack on the American left. The pessimistic Petain gave it as his opinion that the Americans would not get beyond Mont Fuqua before winter. One fact that gave weight to Petain's view was the extreme danger to the Germans which a major advance in this area would present. As already had been pointed out, Mézières was absolutely essential to their supply and evacuation system. Hence, Ludendorff could be expected to throw all available reserves in the path of our advance if it began to make real headway. Pershing's main attack force consisted of three corps disposed side by side. There are zones extending from the Meuse nearly to the western edge of the Argonne Forest. Cameron's 5th Corps would strike the main blow. Bullard's 3rd Corps and Leggett's 1st Corps would advance on either side of the 5th Corps, protecting its flanks. Besides the 9 assault divisions, 6 others were in Corps and Army Reserve. Nearly 4,000 guns were available to support the attack, about two-thirds being manned by American artillery units and the remainder by French units. About 190 light tanks of French manufacture were to be used, manned mostly by American personnel. Some 820 aircraft, 600 flown by Americans, would furnish air support. French hospitals in the rear areas were shared by American medical units. Pershing hoped to strike by surprise and to make a rapid advance of 10 miles, thus penetrating the 3 main German defense lines before Ludendorff could move an effective reserve force in. It was realized that this rapid success might not be achieved. In that case, the fighting would naturally become more severe as fresh German units arrived. Pershing, however, was determined to drive to his objectives in either event. As he said, this was an effort to draw German divisions to our front and to consume them. One of the 3 main defensive lines were captured. Whether sooner or later, 3 tasks would remain to be accomplished. A junction of the French 4th Army north of the Argonne Army, clearing the heights of the Meuse by an attack eastward across the river or by an attack northward along the east bank or by a combination of the two, and an advance to the Sedan-Meuse Railroad. These missions were, with only minor modifications, successfully executed, although the penetration of the 3 main defensive lines proved harder than Pershing had hoped. The first phase was 26 September to 3 October. At 0230 hours, 26 September, the artillery preparation opened. At 5:30, the infantry moved forward. The enemy seemed surprised at the force of the attack, and his forward position was taken promptly. During the next few days, the advance was pushed until most of the southern Meuse-Argonne region had been taken. In general, the First Army's initial advance had carried it through the first 2 German positions, but it had been brought to a halt before the 3rd position. It had become clear now that Pershing's hope of driving rapidly through all 3 positions were not to be fulfilled at once. Many factors contributed to this disappointment. One was the ineffectiveness of tank support, due in part to the unfavorable terrain, particularly the cratered fields of the original No Man's Land, but even more to the relatively small number of tanks available. Casualties, mechanical failures, and the relief of French units had reduced the effectiveness strength to 18 tanks by the end of the first 10 days. Another factor was a difficult supply situation caused by extremely poor roads. The principal factor, however, was a lack of skill and teamwork of our inexperienced troops. As soon as the attack had lost its momentum, Pershing relieved the 3 inexperienced divisions in the line by the veteran 1st, 3rd, and 32nd Divisions. This relief, a most complicated operation because of the already congested roads, was completed by the morning of 1 October. The second phase from 4 to 31 October. The next 4 weeks saw a grueling series of frontal attacks, large and small, during which the First Army slowly beat its way through the 3rd German defensive position. American casualties mounted rapidly as the defenders, now strongly reinforced, made full use of the difficult terrain. While this action was in process in the original zone of attack, Pershing initiated an offensive on the east bank of the Meuse. By the middle of the month, the forces east of the river were so strong that another headquarters was needed to control them. The American Second Army was therefore established with Major General Robert L. Bullard as commander. At the same time, Leggett succeeded Pershing as commander of the First Army. General Pershing's AEF headquarters was now operating as an Army Group headquarters. During this phase of the battle, the enemy was completely cleared from the Argonne Forest. It was there that the well-known incident of the lost battalion of the 77th Division occurred. It was there also that Corporal Sergeant, later Sergeant Alvin York, performed the extraordinary feat of single-handedly killing 15 of the enemy and capturing 132, including 5 officers. Providing air support became progressively more difficult as the fighting moved farther from our air bases and nearer the German lines. The Germans began to use battle squadrons to attack our frontline troops, causing considerable losses. To combat this procedure, Mitchell sent in low-flying pursuit units, which utilized the burst of our own anti-aircraft fire to locate the intruders. On the offensive, also, Mitchell was active. His largest assault consisted of 200 bombers and 160 escorting fighters, striking against German Army reserves, gathering in rear for a counterattack. On this occasion, 32 tons of bombs were dropped, a considerable tonnage for World War I. The slow, although steady progress of First Army made this phase of the battle highly unsatisfactory for Clemenceau. The French minister, who suggested to Foch that he try to have Pershing relieved of command of the American force. Foch, however, had a more comprehensive knowledge of the difficulties encountered and declined to support this action. As a matter of fact, First Army was accomplishing far more than its limited gains indicated, for it was drawing German reserves from other parts of the front, thus contributing directly to Allied successes all along the line. By the end of October, Pershing had finally cleared the enemy from the Argonne Forest, had fought his way through the German main positions, and was able to begin the next phase of his attack. The third phase, 1 to 11 November. The renewed offensive, which the First Army opened on 1 November, was launched under much more favorable circumstances than the attacks of the first two phases. Ample time for planning had been available, since the eventual penetration of the 3rd German line had been foreseen for weeks. The troops were already in position. Construction and repair of roads had greatly improved the logistical situation. Newly arrived American artillery and aviation units had relieved the majority of the attached Allied units, with a result of improvement in liaison and teamwork in general. The inexperienced divisions, which had gone into battle on 26 September, were now battle-wise and efficient. Pershing relieved the divisions which had spent themselves during the second phase, sending in units that had had some chance to rest and absorb replacements. The new attack was a continuation of the previous plan. Summerall's 5th Corps in the center, spearheaded by the veteran 2nd Division, was to drive north and pierce the last German line near Barricourt, while a 1st Corps on the left covered the 5th Corps' left flank and maintained the junction with the French 4th Army. The 3rd Corps on the right was to move northeast, prepared to force a crossing of the Meuse if the Germans withdrew to the east side of the river. In that event, French and American units on the east side of the Meuse were to assist the 3rd Corps by attacking north and east. After a two-hour artillery preparation, the assault units moved forward at daybreak on 1 November. The first day's advance exceeded all expectations, In the center, the 5th Corps advanced about 6 miles, assuring the success of the whole operation. This deep and sudden penetration overran the hostile artillery positions and caused the German High Command to order a withdrawal of the German units facing the First Army west of the Meuse. Much of the credit for this success must be given to General Summerall's skillful control of his artillery. An old artilleryman himself, Summerall had won undying distinction in the Army by exceptional gallantry in the assault of Peking in the Boxer Rebellion. As commander of the 1st Division at Susan in the An Marne Offensive, he had exploited the flexibility of modern artillery fire to an extent previously unrealized. Overwhelming firepower was massed on different points of the front by shifting and converging fire of all the guns and the division as though they were the nozzles of hose spreading fire, steel, and high explosive. Summerall had repeated this system, the genius of the modern fire direction, which would make American artillery supreme on all the fronts of World War II, in earlier actions of the 1st Division than Meuse-Argonne. Now as 5th Corps commander, he employed the same system on a more massive scale, with the spectacular results we have noted. During the succeeding days, the advance was pushed vigorously. On the night of 2-3 November, the 2nd Division surprised the enemy by moving 2 regiments 5 miles through his position. This unorthodox maneuver, in which the troops marched in column of twos on the road, proved completely successful. On 4 November, the 3rd Corps forced a crossing of the Meuse south of Dinsert-Meuse. By 7 November, American units had reached the heights overlooking the city of Sedan. This success signalized the accomplishment of the First Army mission, the Sedan-Meuse Railroad being now denied to the Germans. At this juncture, Foch shifted the left boundary of the First Army to the east of Sedan, which allowed the French 4th Army to capture that city and thus erase the stain of 1870. The Americans then closed up along the Meuse west of Stenay. The units east of the river advanced northeast to secure a good line of departure for a coordinated attack against Montmédy, which Pershing had in mind as the next objective. At this time, the armistice brought combat operations to a halt. About 1,200,000 American troops took part in the successful Meuse-Argonne offensive. The nature of the fight is shown by the fact that we suffered 120,000 casualties. In his final report, Pershing gave high praise to the fortitude of the troops and the rapidly developed skill of the higher commanders and staffs. He also made the following comment on the work of the junior officers. Upon the young commanders of platoons, companies, and battalions fell the heaviest burden. They not only suffered all the dangers and rigors of the fight, but carried the responsibility of caring for and directing their men, often newly arrived and not fully trained. Where these leaders lacked practical knowledge of battle tactics, they supplied the deficiency by courageous onslaughts against the enemy's line. Yet quick to learn, they soon developed on the field into skilled leaders and inspired their men with increased confidence.